Good evening and welcome to the Oceano Community Services District Board of Directors meeting for December 10th, 2008. May I have a roll call, please, Gina?
President Hill.
Here.
Director Dahl.
Here.
Director Dean.
Here.
Director Mann.
Here.
Director Lucy.
Here.
Please join us in the flag salute. Ready? Salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
Mary Lucy and Jim Hill. Would you like to stand and repeat after me? You got your whole cheat sheet? I get confused in the middle of it. Too many constitutions. Okay, the hardest part. I.
Jim Hill.
Mary Lucy.
Bergdahl.
Thank you. Do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California.
Do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the Constitution of the United States and to the Constitution of the State of California.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California.
That I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
That I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties upon which I am about to enter.
And that I will willfully
and faithfully,
discharge the duties upon which I am about to enter.
I made it big so you can read it too. Congratulations.
Okay, item number four on our first meeting in December is the election of officers. The first would be selection of the new president, and I will open the nominations. Mary, if you would like to start.
Yeah, I'd like the opportunity to nominate Director Barbara Mann for the president of the board of the Oceana Community Services District.
Are there any other nominations? I'll move the nominations be closed. And we can.
There's only one person running, so that I think the result is a foregone conclusion, but you probably should call for a vote.
You may have a roll call, please, Gina.
I open the nominations. Yes, Mary.
I'd like the opportunity to nominate Director Hill for Vice President of the Board of the Oceana Community Services District.
Are there any other nominations? No? Hearing none, the nominations are closed. Roll call vote, please.
Yeah, right now. Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Dean?
Yes.
Director Lucy?
Yes.
Vice President Hill?
Yes.
President Mann?
Yes.
It'll take me a bit.
All right, congratulations. The next thing will be public comment, and any member of the public may address the board on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this board. The board will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the board cannot act on items not on the agenda, and presentations are limited to 3 minutes. Is there any comments from the public?
Hi, Mr. Hill, members of the board. I want to congratulate Jim Hill, Mary Lucy, and Mr. Dahl. And Barbara, congratulations.
Thank you.
New president.
Any other public comment?
Good evening, President Mann. My name is Mark Wampler, Roy Grande resident.
like to congratulate Director Dahl, also Director Hill, for their successful reelection, and also for Mary Lucy for hard-fought campaign, successful campaign. Good luck. Thanks.
Thank you.
The reason I'm here today has come to my attention that there have been some comments related from this podium right here related to Kenmark Gardens Mobile Home Park. Somewhat disturbing to me, so I'd like to clarify what I know about those comments, that to the effect that the wells that Kenmark Gardens have somehow not complied with county health requirements, and that there has been a failure of testing. Okay, I'd like to know firsthand knowledge that it is not true, that the wells at Kenmark Gardens have successfully passed every health requirement, has done so for whatever reason these comments were made, possibly their wells in the neighboring mobile home parks did not pass. Maybe they are struggling, and I don't know. I don't have the reports in front of me, nor do I have anyone to interpret those reports. It's just it's just kind of egregious to hear those kind of things. People that live at Kenmark Gardens will tell you that it's the cleanest, most peaceful park of its size around. People love to live there. I myself am a resident, and I'd just like for the person that had made those comments to clear that up. We're doing just fine. More power to these other parks that want to apply, and I hope they get OCSD water if they are struggling with their own wells. We're doing just fine. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Mark. Before we go any further tonight, I just wanted to take a minute and talk about how I plan on running the meetings. When something is introduced, staff will probably introduce it. The board will then have the opportunity to ask questions of staff and get answers from staff. Then it will go to the public for public comment. Then it will come back to the board to vote. Public comments, you know, it's one bite at the apple. So think about what you're going to say when you get up to talk about an item, the particular item, because we just don't need to have this back and forth, or a dialogue between the board and the people in the audience. A board member can ask a question if they want to, you know, if there's a question they want to ask and get information, that's fine, but we're not going to get into these long tirades. So that's what I'm planning and hoping that this year is going to be very successful, and we're going to all work together and get back to the business that we're here for, sewer and water and fire protection. Thank you. All right, reports. Brian Haskell, commander of the South Sheriff's South Station.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Brian Haskell, commander of Sheriff's Department South Station. I just have a few items to bring up for your interest. On November 24th, between 8 o'clock in the morning and 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we had a forced entry burglary in the 1600 block of Wilmar. The resident of Oceano was arrested on a traffic stop and was in possession of the property that was stolen in that burglary. So she was arrested for possession of stolen property, as well as some mail that she had taken from a number of residences in Oceano. So she's awaiting prosecution on that, and we're still looking into the mail theft issue as well. let's see, where's the date? On November 18th, we had a garage door graffitied in the 2200 block of Ocean Street with some gang graffiti. My deputies did some follow-up on that case, and they were able to arrest a 17-year-old juvenile who is a resident of Oceano and a confirmed gang member for committing that vandalism. And at the time he was questioned and rearrested, he was in Juvenile Services Center on a probation violation, so obviously not his first go-around. So we're making a little bit of headway on the graffiti vandalism as well in town. And then the last thing I'll mention, and I know this seems to come up every month, but As the economy gets worse and worse, we seem to be seeing more and more of these scams involving checks and letters sent to people in the mail. And I've received three of them in the last 2 weeks, and I wanted to point these out specifically to people so they can see just how elaborate these scams are becoming. The latest one that I received was put on letterhead for a major worldwide bank called ING Direct. And what's interesting about this one is that there was a check that went along with it that was drawn on a bank in Juneau, Alaska. And the letter came from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. So that should immediately ring some bells for people when they get something like that in the mail that there's something wrong. But it was a check for $4,950, and the instructions were for the person to deposit this check and then send a large portion of that proceeds back to this address, and then you'll receive your winnings of $450,000 payable to your bank account for your sweepstakes and lottery winning. Well, unfortunately, the check is a forgery, a fake, and they're getting quite good at it, and people that participate in this send the money and never hear again. So we're warning everybody, if you do get something like this.
I've talked to a few people lately, and what they're seeing is the credit card companies will send you, like, five checks on a sheet.
Yes.
And I know this is happening to me right now, and I'm receiving the damages in as we speak every day, more damages. And what they do is why don't you tell us what they do with those checks?
Well, those checks are legitimate checks. They're what are called cash advance checks that are given by the credit card companies to their customers so that they can take out a money draw against their credit card, and you end up paying quite a bit of interest on that because they charge extra for cash advance. The problem is they send them out in the mail in an envelope, which makes them a really good target for somebody going through your mail. The best way to avoid this problem is to have a locking mailbox so that somebody can't have access to your mail, number one. Number two, you can contact your credit card company if you don't want to receive them. You can instruct them not to send them to you so that you don't have to worry about them being stolen. But the third thing is, unfortunately, sometimes people do steal these things and forge them, and then we end up getting involved and tracking them down and charging them with the forgery, which is what we're doing in the case that you're talking about in particular. So if you do get them and you don't want to use them and you successfully receive them, no one takes them, the best thing to do is to cross-cut shred them, because that will make them, you know, disappear, and you won't have to worry about somebody getting their hands on them.
Thank you.
Are there any questions from the public for Commander?
Yes, sir.
Just like to commend you, sir, on your follow-up with the graffiti vandalism. That's something that's sort of dear to my heart. And I think we'll probably see a lot more of this, unfortunately, because of the downturn of our economy and the breakdown of families and just hysteria out there. So commend you and thank you for the work you're doing.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Commander Hastel.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Merry Christmas to you, since we won't see you again this year.
Thank you. You too.
A report of the November Fire Department operations. Captain Angelo.
Get through our maze here. All right. Good evening. In the month of November, we had another fatality of a train versus pedestrian down by 22nd Street in the creek area. November 26th, we responded on MAC aid to a residential structure fire at 1771 Manhattan in Grover Beach. It was a pretty well-involved fire. By the time any fire personnel got there, we did have damage to the entire top story of one condo or duplex, and it started to cause damage to the adjacent duplex as well. Once we did get fire personnel at scene, they were able to extinguish it, and nobody was hurt. They did lose two of the family's animals in that fire, though. And then we also had a vehicle fire out in the Ocean Dunes, which we're still undetermined on how it was started. And then furthermore, in the month of November, we had a chance for pretty good opportunity for several different of members of the department to go through different training. On the week of November 10th through the 14th, Captain Bova, driver operator Paul Colada, and firefighter Wathen all attended the Fresno Training Symposium. While they were there the entire week, Captain Bova and Paul Colada both went through a Rescue System 1 class, which is high-angle rope rescues, low-angle rope rescues, being able to manipulate heavy objects using hand tools and ropes. It's mainly set up for natural disasters and whatnot and how to manage those. Very good class. And then Sean Wathen went through Driver Operator 1A, which is the first step in two of becoming a driver operator. And then the following week, he went to Northern California to finish out the second part of that class. And he's working his way up to the driver operator position. So he's moving along quite well on that. Let's see. We also had a good opportunity over at the Couch Chevron on Grover Beach right before they demoed the shop that they had up there. We were able to go in there and use the facility for training. We were able to cut holes in the roof for ventilation training and back and forth. And we actually learned quite a bit about, you know, what radio frequencies works best amongst the two of us, because our radios don't match up. It's just the three of our departments do, but Cal Fire's, there's a complete difference, so we can't say switch to channel 2. So we got to play around with that quite a bit, and a lot of the newer guys got to intermingle and introduce themselves to one another, so it worked out quite well. Also, the Firefighters Association, we've been working on restoring our old engine, old engine 1. It has a new paint job now, and we're working on all the chrome and whatnot, so we're pretty excited about that. We're hoping to have it done within a few months, if we can get some work details on it. That's all I had.
Are there any questions for the captain? Any questions from the audience?
Just a real quick question, Craig. Have you talked, since, you know, that was one of the problems with 9/11, the different departments addressing the emergency couldn't communicate because they weren't all on the same radio frequency. Have you talked a little bit more about maybe having a dedicated frequency, or at least something that would bring, you know, the entities together if we did have a disaster?
There are state and federal wide frequencies. It's just when we initiated our training, the three departments that we, Oceano, Grover Beach, and Rio Grande, we have a training channel set aside, and we went to that and we realized, oh wait, Cal Fire doesn't have that. So we actually had to use a true tactical channel, which is, they call them white channels, and I think there's 7 or 8 of those that everybody in the state has.
Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you. Okay, moving on to 8A, the sale of the 1998 Suburban. Kevin, would you like to talk about this?
Well, I have some detail, and if you have more questions, I'm sure Captain Angelo would be glad to answer. The Suburban is surplus to our needs. We had it for sale. We did get one bid from Canada for an offer of $8,000. They're going to have to come down and retrieve the vehicle and bring it back to their location up there. The fire committee reviewed this sale to the Canadian Profire Emergency Equipment and recommends it to you for approval.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please, Gina. Last.
Director Dean?
Yes.
Vice President Hill?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Lucy?
Yes.
President Mann?
Yes. The next item is the in lieu of highway vehicle fees. Kevin, do you want to talk about this also?
Certainly. At the Board of Supervisors meeting last month, was a recommendation from the county administrative analyst to grant to the Oceano Community Services District about $54,000 in lieu fees that are given to the county from the state of California for community impacts due to the state recreational vehicle area of the Pismo Dunes. The day before that meeting was to take place, a letter was drafted by County Fire Chief Jenkins objecting to the amount of money that Oceano was going to receive. The basis of his objection was that he was concerned that it interfered countywide with the automatic aid and mutual aid agreements the various fire departments have, and that fire departments should not be reimbursed for mutual aid and automatic aid they give to each other, a concept which within the fire community statewide, if not nationwide, is agreed to. However, that was not what was happening with this money. It wasn't really a reimbursement for automatic or mutual aid agreement. It was to recover costs that this district incurs for providing fire and emergency medical service to the state recreation area, which we provide not so much by an automatic and mutual aid agreement, but by a separate contract. So Chief Hubert met with Chief Jenkins to explain to him the situation, and we are hopefully back on track to receive that money that we had originally wanted for rescue equipment, medical equipment, firefighting equipment. These in-lieu funds cannot be used for any purpose. They're supposed to be used in some way relating to the community impacts that are caused by the state recreational area, increased number of visitors, or whatever it is, activity that causes a community to suffer some sort of impact, and it's a way to compensate them. So our supervisor.
Some of the other money, just for the residents of Oceano to know, are going is some will be repair of the levee, and there will be used some for street cleaning, the sand removal, and this. So a good amount of this money will be benefiting the community of Oceano. Any comments from the public? Did you have a comment, Mary?
I'm just curious, maybe you can help me after the meeting, of how these priorities when are determined. Like, how did street sweeping become a priority for Oceano versus signs in the alley so the fire department can get through it? I mean, I'm just kind of curious on how these funds, since they weren't in the annual budget, how they're determined.
I believe, and Kevin can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe all these funds come from the off-highway activities, and it has to be linked to what happens on the beach in some way. So the sand that gets dumped on Pier Avenue, you know, most of that does come from the ATVs coming off the beach.
What about the trash? Would that trash that the tourists bring to town and leave behind on this side of Highway 1, would that be considered damage to the town?
Well, there are many groups asking for these funds, and I, you know, you talk about priorities. It's almost more competitive than, say, priorities.
Yeah.
For example, the sand and the impact on the streets, that's a Grover Beach issue. So Grover Beach was asking for that money, I believe. And or the County Public Works, sorry, county maintains that street, roadway. Yeah, that was a county issue, not something where the Oceano Community Services District set a priority and said, here is our list. We had determined that the equipment for our fire department was important to us, and then we put in our request for these funds, and it was to be divided among all those who asked, including these other agencies like the County of San Luis Obispo. Yeah.
And I don't know who put the levy on.
Did we put a request
same with
in
the levy
for, like, street lighting for safety? Or
anything like that?
No, we did not.
Okay.
And we off-road things up there, so you know, you take what you get on these.
Yeah, it's just that you need to ask for more.
Well, you could ask for the whole pot, but I don't think you'd get it all. Are there any comments from the public? Craig, did you have anything you wanted to add to this?
Well, just for your ease of mind, Mary, the fire department, on the fire department side, we actually originally had went after this for around $140,000, and for different, numerous different things, and this is what it's been dwindled down to. It's been very competitive in trying to get anything we could. The fire department's been actually trying to get our hands on some of this money for over 3 years. And it just came to light to the rest of the world about a year ago. And that's when it really got competitive. So it's going to be kind of hectic to try and get anything more, but the county is going to be accepting requests throughout the year, and then come budget time, they're going to allocate that based on the requests.
And I think Kevin did mention that Supervisor Sajjan is certainly supporting Oceano's requests wholeheartedly.
He's been very supportive, which is very good for all of us. And also, I note that there is additional money that the county is holding, and they're also taking in money as we speak and going forward. So it might be good to have a priority list, as Mary suggested, to maybe we can request money goes to Public Works for trash, additional help with trash amelioration and other things related to the off-road vehicle use there.
Thank you. 8C, Santa Claus, would you like to speak about that, Captain Angelo?
Well, Santa Claus is coming to town. The information I have is it will be the 16th. You're looking at me like that's wrong. The note I have upstairs is 16th.
Tuesday?
What?
I thought it was the 16th. That was the obvious one of the captains, but the captain that's coming on tomorrow said it's going to be this Friday.
Okay.
So he's the 10th, the 12th, or the 16th.
Going, so that'll be a pretty good indication
that he's arriving.
That he's here. And we invite anyone to come down, kids, family, to come down and meet Santa Claus and tell him what you want for Christmas.
Okay. Thank you very much. 9, utility items. The cleaning and inspection of the district sewer and water lines, Kevin?
This is a almost pro forma declaration that you make each board meeting. That's a continuing disclosure regarding an emergency you declared in order to conduct certain sewer-related activities.
Okay. The board, do we want to comment on this again? We've done it every month. Mayor, you're...
I move that we adopt the emergency.
Okay, well, actually, I guess it needs to go out to the public if anybody wants to talk about anything.
That's what you're asking.
What? You don't have any questions. Okay. All right, anybody from the public have a question or comment on this item? If not, then Mary's made a motion.
I'll second the motion to continue the declaration of emergency for cleaning and inspection of district sewer and water lines.
Does this have to be a roll call? Roll call, please.
Roll call vote, yes.
Sorry, I'm going to get stuck here again. Director Lucy?
Yes.
Vice President Hill?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Dean?
Yes.
President Mann?
Yes. Okay, that brings us to 9B, the agreement to provide water services to Halcyon Estates. Kevin?
Yes. This has been before the board on more than one occasion. The most recent meeting where action was taken was at September 24th. At that meeting, you directed your former general manager to amend the agreements and gave some specific direction to him. The agreements have now been amended and are prepared for water service to the Grande Mobile and the Halcyon Mobile Home Estates. They're attached. There's four agreements, two for each of the parks. One of them is a water service agreement with each of the parks, and the other is a water wheeling agreement increased. That was a request of the owners of that park. I also would like to let you know that there's three mobile home parks in the area, and from discussions with LAFCO, it was suggested that orderly government, reasonable and efficient provision of services, that it would be best if all three parks were annexed into the district at this time, came out of the sphere of influence of the city of Arroyo Grande and into the district. The other mobile home park, the Kenmar Mobile Homes, does not need any service from us at this time, so there would be no fees charged for, you know, the Lopez or State Water, front footage, or any of the other fees that we're charging the other two parks. However, there would be some incremental costs due them or due us, because there would be additional filing fees with LAFCO and additional work done by our engineer. I contacted the owner of that mobile home park, Lois Krantz, and discussed it with her. I told her the incremental cost for the annexation would be estimated at $8,000. That was probably a high number. That's significantly less than it will be for that park to come in on its own at a later date. Quite a bit less. Very much a reduced price from what it would be to come in on their own. She felt and informed me that at this time, since they didn't need any water service from us and weren't receiving anything from the district, that she did not want to be part of the annexation. So I'm going to memorialize that in a letter and also inform LAFCO Executive Officer that that park does not want to be part of the annexation at this time. The other agreements are ready to go. There is an issue that the two owners would like to address regarding the insurance, and that would be with regard to the resolutions number 24 and 26. And looking for where that insurance item was. It was item 4 on page 4. We have asked that they name our district as an additional insured. The insurance carrier is telling them that is a somewhat unusual request. As
what insurance or where the insurance companies need to go to?
Perhaps I could address that issue. The reason why the additional insured request is made is that if we were supplying the water directly to them through our own pipes, there would not be a requirement here. But recall, we're wheeling the water through Arroyo Grande's pipes. And Arroyo Grande has required that we agree to indemnify and hold Arroyo Grande harmless against any loss or liability that might arise out of this situation. What Arroyo Grande is particularly concerned about is cross-contamination from water backflowing into the Arroyo Grande system and causing some sort of damage to the system or harm to their residents. So they required that we indemnify them against any loss or liability. The agreement requires that the mobile home park owners indemnify us against any loss or liability. And the only way to ensure that they would be able to perform on that indemnity is to require that they have the insurance. I had a brief conversation with Mr. Nolenberg yesterday regarding this issue, and I invited him to have the insurance company give me a call, and perhaps I could explain it to him. I didn't hear from anybody today, but it might just take time for them to reach me. But that's the rationale for having the provision in the agreement.
Yes, in the state where I work on a lot of contracts, we do include that additional insurance, and it doesn't seem to be a problem for the insurance companies.
My experience has been in doing this in all sorts of settings, is so long as you can provide the insurance company with a rational explanation about what our interest in this thing is that needs to be insured, they will provide the coverage. Their only interest is in making sure that they're not providing some sort of coverage to somebody who has no interest in it. And I suspect that if given the opportunity to talk to the insurance companies, we'd be able to work this out.
They'll understand what you're saying. And it also gives you a chance to be notified should the insurance lapse or something like that.
Right.
So that was the other reason that generally you have that.
Mary, do you have any questions?
No, I think they've been answered. Just out of curiosity, what is the amount of water that the increase is?
It's 5 acres.
Do you have any questions or comments, Jim?
And that was based on verification with the Rio Grande of historical usage?
Correct. We looked at their meter reads for the last 2 or 3 years and averaged those, rounded up.
I know this is a culmination of a lot of work by staff and council, so it's...
I certainly appreciate all the work that has been done on this, but I'm also always back to my one question or reminder that the LAFCO fees have to be paid before we turn on the water?
Thank you, President Mann. I neglected to mention something in my opening comments that I wanted to make sure that at least the Nolenbergs and Collins understood, and that is to process the LAFCO application. It would be our intent to request from the park owners the LAFCO fees up front with the checks made out by them to LAFCO, then we will forward the application with those checks at the same time. And also, for payment of other administrative costs and engineering, especially that incurred by John Wallace, that the firm of John Wallace would be contracted by us, but we will pay his invoice to us upon receipt of payment from the two park owners. So if they want to keep the work going, they need to pay us timely as we are invoiced by him.
The short answer to the question is they don't get the water until everything is completed, including the completion of the annexation.
Okay.
Under the agreement.
Yeah, I just didn't want us to be fronting the money.
Right. I think that's how I understood your concern.
Yeah.
You didn't want us to expend the money and be reimbursed later. You wanted us to be neutral on it, and that is the intent to structure all payments, whether it's to our engineer or to LAFCO, would be to require the park owners to pay that.
Okay. Do you have any other questions?
I have one more question. They do have a year to complete all these conditions. Is that correct? About a year?
It's
that what I read?
Yeah, it's a year and a couple of days. If you approve it tonight, the way it's written, that's correct. We wanted to put some time in there for this to be done. I think that's a reasonable thing to do, and I think the amount of time, a year, is reasonable. LAFCO process should go faster. However, on these kind of issues, it's hurry, and that'll be going to them at their next council meeting. And we don't anticipate that they would not approve them. In fact, anticipate that they will find them acceptable.
Would the Collins or Nolenberg like to make any comments, or do you have any questions? Please step to the mic.
Charles Nolenberg, Grande Mobile Manor. I was looking over our insurance policy, and it states aggregate amount it pays $2 million total. But an issue that came up today with the agent, he was looking under the way this was written, and it has it per, but it also has underneath something per incident that was $1 million, and that's kind of the standard way they write these policies for parks our size. So there is somewhat of a little bit of a conflict, and I just wanted to kind of see if we could clarify if that $2 million aggregate total $2 million policy is kind of what they meant by what they stated here, and I wonder if we could kind of work that out. Because my agent is saying the way it's written, we may have to buy an additional $1 million worth of insurance at $850 a year cost. So,
Alex, can you help us out on this?
I think I can. These kinds of policies, I can't speak particularly to mobile homes, but these kinds of general liability policies can be written with a combined single limit, which is the way I wrote the agreement,
okay,
in which regardless of the number of claims, regardless of how the claims arose, whether there's one claim or six, it's a $2 million pot, okay? That's what this means. Some policy forms, generally speaking, they're the older style of doing it, parses it out. It says there's, if use a more a familiar example, of, say, a car accident. Two people are injured in a car accident by the third party. If the third party's policy is of the type that you described, each of those people has $1 million available. But there's $2 million total. If one of them only has injuries of, say, $500,000, and the other one has injuries of $1.5 million, one person gets $500. You know, in the real world, the kind of claim you might have, some significantly lower amount would be reasonable. So I understand Mr. Nolenberg's concern. It does raise a legitimate issue in terms of some added cost to him to get the kind of insurance that we're talking about. And there's a policy question for the board to make a decision on.
And you may want to discuss that, but there was one other thing I had. When LAFCO was here at the last meeting, I think we decided that it would be best for us to go ahead and annex at the same time we do this change of sphere of influence. And this was, I thought this was going to be changed, but I noticed on this new draft that it says and subsequent annexation, where LAFCO suggested we do that all at one time.
Which section are you in?
Page 4, item B, under 3, contingencies, item B.
Okay. That's intended. It's one right after the other.
So that's not a problem for
us to do that. I don't
think
that's a problem.
Concurrently.
No. Okay. I don't think that should pose a problem for anybody.
All right. That's all.
Thank you. Are there any other comments from the public? Seeing none? Okay, what do we want to do about the insurance amount? Start with you, Vern.
Well, I'd like to hear the opinions of staff and the attorney as far as what our liabilities are and what they feel we need to do with this. I'd like to have some input from them.
Okay. Alex, you want to say it again then?
Well, I've pretty much said what my opinion is. I think in the real world, the risk that you're insuring against here is potential liability to the city of Arroyo Grande if some sort of cross-contamination occurs. What the dollar amount associated with that might be, gosh, who knows? I couldn't hazard a guess. Maybe Phil might want to take a shot at it. But not if he's smart. I've already commented on the insurance amount.
Kevin, you have any thoughts on this?
Well, this has been to the board on stuff that insurance is high enough. It's a $2 million total, $1 million per incurrence. If it becomes not possible to do that, I think the board ought to give, in approving this, ought to give staff to change that to a $2 million policy with $1 million per incident. And then on the naming the additional insureds, I really think we should try and get the district named as an additional insured. And I had a question for our attorney. In case it's a problem for the insurance agency, and that is, do we really need to name our district, our directors, officers, and agents, consultants, et cetera, or is it enough to just name the district? In case we do make some progress with them and they're saying, well, we're willing to name the district, we can do that, that's a government agency, would that give us enough coverage?
The language used was fairly typical, but if that's a stumbling block, I don't have a problem with dropping that. Dropping the the additional language about agents and officers and that sort of thing, because the district has an obligation of indemnity back to all the employees and officers and directors anyway. So I don't have a problem with that.
Okay, so my recommendation is that you approve it as it's before you, in the exact form it is, because we want to get this moving. But you're going to allow staff the flexibility to let the insurance go for something less than the $2 million single limit to a $2 million aggregate with a $1 million per occurrence, and that you're going to give staff the flexibility to work with their insurance carrier to drop off the directors, officers, and agents and just name the directors, if that will result in the district getting named as an additional insured. I think it's, at this point, I don't want to recommend anything less than that. If that can't be done, then we should bring it back to the board for further discussion and resolution.
Pamela, did you have any thoughts on this?
I think I do want to move forward with this. We've been at this for a long time. You've done a good job of putting this together, and I think the $2 million is probably enough. I'd like to give you the flexibility, as you said, so we can make adjustments and work with the insurance company and the...
Which means we're on the hook, but we don't have to prove we have an insurance policy to back it up.
I'm trying to guesstimate if we were to go on to the hook for contamination. And this is only a guesstimate to try to figure out what it would cost us to run direct piping. If, for example, there was a contamination, what would it cost the district to run direct piping?
I don't have those figures immediately available.
But I think that would kind of give us a guesstimate of what would it be if we, we've gone into this agreement with these homeowners, right, and say that there is contamination, that's what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to lay a direct pipe to get at it, the wheeling agreement. So if that cost us 1.7, kind of cut ourselves a little short there. But of course, it wouldn't cost that much. But that would kind of give us a guesstimate of how much we need to cover ourselves for. Does that make any sense to anybody but me?
I understand what you're saying. And I should probably preface this by saying that Zone 3 recently had a contamination issue.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to clean up the contamination in the pipe. So it's not like you have to put in brand new piping.
Right.
You can clean it up, and it does not cost a heck of a lot.
But if Arroyo Grande wasn't willing to provide that wheeling service anymore, because that would give them grounds to back out of a wheeling agreement, what would it cost us to provide the service that we have committed to? A guesstimate.
I may not be calculating this correctly, but in former General Manager O'Reilly's August 13th report to the board, he indicated that the cost to directly connect Grande Mobile Manor was going to be just shy of $170,000, and the cost for Halcyon Estates was going to be just shy of $130,000.
So I would suggest $500,000 additional.
But I think you're missing part of the puzzle. That's the cost to connect. That's not the cost to pay the damages to the city of Arroyo Grande if there's a contamination issue.
Jim, what do you think?
I would too like to see this go forward. Don't get me wrong, but I don't want to get caught with our, shorts down around our ankles down the road.
Had insurance. Also, we required annually, I don't know if it's the health department or the public utilities commission, but annually requires a backflow test that we have to send the papers in, and it's all done legally to make sure that all those backflow devices are working properly. So there's a lot of, the chance of Arroyo Grande is the one that's going to be wheeling and actually we're getting our water from. And as I say, they haven't even been concerned to the point that they care if we have insurance. So there's been a lot of precautions taken there. I hope that makes you feel better.
Jim, your turn.
That does make me feel better. I also was curious whether that amount of insurance would satisfy Arroyo Grande. In the agreement, would it be worthwhile to further give the staff jurisdiction to make these agreements subject to the continuing wheeling agreement with the city of Arroyo Grande? Is that
well? They are interconnected. You can't right. have one without the other.
The other. Okay, and in that case, I think it's your suggestion to authorize the staff to negotiate the insurance thing is probably adequate.
Thank you.
All right, now we need these resolutions.
Mechanically, I think what I would do is I would approve the resolutions subject to the changes described by the general manager. I'd take them up one at a time just so we have a good record.
Okay, who wants to make the first one?
I would move that we approve resolution number 2008-24, subject to the precautions that our general manager will take regarding the insurance and the language there, and that we proceed with that.
Looking for a second?
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. Second. Roll call, please.
Director Dean?
Yes.
Director Lucy?
Yes.
Vice President Hill?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
President Mann?
Yes. Okay, we're moving on to... Please.
Vice President Hill?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Dean?
Yes.
Director Lucy?
Yes.
President Mann?
Yes. Okay. Now we're on Nolenberg's 2008-26.
Okay. I would move that we approve resolution number 2008-26 with the appropriate insurance language that our GM will be working on.
Need a second, please? Second. Moved by Director Dean, seconded by Director Dahl. Roll call, please.
Director Dean?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Vice President Hill?
Yes.
Director Lucy?
Yes.
President Mann?
Yes. Now we're on 2008-27.
I'll move adoption of resolution 2008-27, a resolution of OCSD approving a water wheeling agreement with the city of Arroyo Grande, subject to the insurance provisions being finally worked out as suggested by the general manager.
Looking for a second?
I'll second that.
It's been moved by Vice President Hill, seconded by Director Dean. Roll call, please.
Vice President Hill?
Yes.
Director Dean?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Lucy?
Yes.
President Mann?
Yes. Well, I'm glad that we've now finally taken care of that. And you'll let us know when you've taken care of all
this. Yeah, I'll report back to the board exactly what happens.
Okay.
Do that in an open meeting.
Thank you very much. I think we'll take a 5-minute recess and then we'll get to our water master plan update. Let me see it. Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
You're welcome.
Yes.
What I'm afraid of is I'm going to repeat myself.
The next three items.
Come on, Mary.
We're missing Mary.
Now waiting for two board members to return. But I will go ahead and make this announcement because it doesn't affect either one of them. Santa Claus will be here on Friday, December the 12th. Okay, Captain Angelo just checked with the North Pole and found out it would be Friday the 12th. Santa Claus will be here.
I'm marking my calendar right now.
Did you turn the corner there, Vern?
I did turn the corner.
Okay.
I didn't go right in front of the
yeah.
deal, but I did check around the corner.
We'll put a cowbell on us so that we know the 5 minutes are up or something. Yes, we are. Well, we're waiting for one board member.
She went out to her car. Sadly, I couldn't see her.
Guess we can carry on without her, can't we? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Have you found our board member?
No.
Oh.
Not moving.
We'll wait one more minute and then we will start minus a board member. Ah.
This guy scared me. I left.
All right. Now, we are back in session. Again, I announced that Santa Claus will be here on December the 12th. Now we're going to go to the water master plan update. Steve Tanaka from the Wallace Group is going to be discussing the district's water master plan, the sewer master plan, and the water and sewer rate study. Since they all are interconnected, he just would like to deal with all three of them at once, and I think that's a good idea.
Good evening, President Mann, members of the board, staff, and public. Steve Tanaka with Wallace Group. Pleasure to be here tonight. As you just mentioned, I'm going to be, talking about essentially three items tonight: a water master plan update, a focused sewer collection system study, and services, things that we identify as part of our master planning effort that we know that need to be done as part of serving the public's needs now and in the future. And then moving forward from a fiscal standpoint to make sure that adequate rates are in place to fund those projects. So that's essentially why we're here tonight. So what I'd like to do first is start with the water master plan. And as some of you know, a master plan was done by Gehring and Taylor in 2004. So in fairly recent history, a master plan was performed and accomplished. One of the things that we were set out and asked to do as part of this effort is really to update this water master plan. This water master plan from 2004 is very comprehensive. It has a number of elements to it, all of which, as we go through our update process for the master plan, will essentially touch on all of those elements. But I will say that probably one of the areas that we're going to focus pretty heavily on is going to be the water supply and demand section, because that's what we see is going to be very critical to serving the district's future needs and their customers. When we start out working in parallel with both the water master plan and the sewer collection system study update, one of the things that we'll do is take advantage of working on these two tasks in parallel. And so one of the first things that we set out to do is get all the what we call the demographic information together relative to current population. And then we look forward to what you have remaining in the district service boundary to develop, and therefore where are those future demands going to be provided in both the water and the sewer system. So that information, where we collect demographic information, project population demands, look to see what your future water demands and your sewer flows will be in the future. We do those really in conjunction with one another. So those activities will be done in parallel. So as we move forward, then we'll be, that will essentially, that information will set really the basis for how we go about assessing what our future needs are to meet your needs. So on the water system side, what we'll be doing is once we get the information together on demographic needs, your future population projections, we'll be looking out generally on the order of 20 years, a 20-year planning horizon to meet your future needs. And what we found out after we had prepared that scope is that they have done the model in what's called EPANet. It's an older version of a water model. But we did discover that the data set that was used to do the water modeling effort is compatible with the WaterCAD software that we use. So we will be able to get a very expedient data transfer and actually do the modeling effort. I think in the scope that I had in the package, we weren't sure at that time that we were going to be able to accomplish that within the budget that we had proposed, but we will. And what we will be doing is taking the modeling effort to what we call essentially the backbone of your water system. We won't be looking at every small water lateral that feeds to the various residential areas, but we will be looking at your main backbone water system, looking at average day, peak day demands and fire flow requirements, and how your system is capable of delivering water and fire protection to the community. Once we get all these parameters laid out from the modeling effort, we'll identify both existing and future capital improvement projects that we would recommend to implement or to correct any deficiencies that we note. And those capital improvement programs will also form the basis for the five-year CIP that our consultant, Clayton Tugfield, will need to accomplish the rate study. But one thing I did want to make sure that we were clear on is that we will not only provide a five-year capital improvement layout of recommended facilities and improvements, both for the water and sewer system, but we will be projecting out to the 20-year period. Generally, what we will do is we will prioritize those capital improvements, what we would call either phase one, two, and three, or short-term versus long-term, however we want to craft those, but we will prioritize those improvements. But certainly we'll give our rate consultant a five-year look ahead, for both water and sewer improvements. So that's what we're set out to accomplish as part of the water rate, water master plan effort. So, and then on the sewer master plan side of things, what we will be doing there essentially is obviously focusing on collection system only. But what we'll be doing there is also doing a parallel effort with sewer modeling. So we'll be taking the sewer collection system information, putting that into a sewer model, and then also taking the flow and for use data. And from that water use data, then we can translate that, and some percentage of that water use data is then going to turn into wastewater flow. And then we'll also have cross checks and balances with a number of the other master plans that we've done in the area, and we can compare similar type, what we call per capita demands for population and so forth. So we'll be doing the same thing on the sewer collection system side, laying out a five-year capital improvement program, but also looking ahead out into the future, out to the 20-year planning horizon. So, and what we will be doing in conjunction with those two studies then is getting that five-year information together and then getting Mr. Tugfield started on the rate study. Clayton Tugfield has about 23 years of experience in doing rate studies. Some of you may know him. He's done a number of the rate studies here in the area for Roy Grandy and many others. He's very familiar with the local water supplies and their costs and so forth. So we've been working with Clayton for about 10 years on a number of very similar type projects. But essentially what we'll be doing then is going through the rate study process both on the water and sewer side, looking at both user fees, and connection fees, making sure that as we move forward, that the capital improvement program that we identify and your current and future anticipated capital and operation maintenance costs are addressed appropriately as part of that proposed rate structure. With that, I'll open it up to any questions. I know there's probably a lot more detail in Mr. Tuckfield's proposed scope, but I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Mary, do you have any questions?
Well, of course, but somebody else can go first.
Jim?
One of my thoughts on the capital improvement plan with regard to the rate study would be to look at the possibility of assigning the cost of capital improvements as a direct property assessment, such that possibly an income tax offset could be achieved. There was a possibility that might be available for certain capital improvement projects. I know that's not possible for O&M, but for capital mm-hmm. improvement, it might be possible.
Any chance I give you a minute there to look at that? And the board, too. It's on a scope of work, page 4, task 1, 1.2.
Yes.
And then down at the end of that paragraph in the parentheses, such as current revenues, long-term debt, grant and loan funding, special assessments. I think that's what we're talking about.
Yes, that is correct.
We'd like to have Mr. Tuckfield not just have skipped over the idea of special assessments and listed here to round out a list, but actually bring us some alternative, some special assessment alternative specifically. Okay. That's what I hear Vice President Hill saying.
Okay, sure.
Actually, I've had a chance to meet Mr. Tuckfield's past studies, and I see that he seems to miss the economic impact in the household in his studies, that what these rate increases does to the individual household. So I want to know if he's ever done a study such as that will have an economical impact on individuals in the middle of a recession, in the middle of the stock market crashing, in the middle of the highest foreclosure rates in the United States of America, and also between a 12 to 15% unemployment rate just in the Oceano area. All the growth has stopped, and there's been a 33% depreciation in our property values. So I never see those real life situations in his studies. And I don't see it anywhere in the scope of work that you would even begin to address the economical state that this country's in right now. Now, I know you probably don't personalize these studies, but you know, as directors representing the community and have been elected to do so, you know, I have to look in my neighborhood in good conscience and say, is this rate increase of $20 going to make this family fold? You know, are they going to
sure.
lapse on their water bills entirely because they can't pay their electric bill, their gas bill, and their water bill? And if they're unfortunate enough to be in zone 1-1A, you know, and anybody who's had any of their retirement up in the stock market knows that that money's gone. The rate study, I think, is going to be different this year than past years, not the same rate study that's happened since 1985 that says, yes, we need a rate increase. Well, we know we need a rate increase, but I don't think the rate increase is the first line of defense. I truly believe it should be the last line of defense in this current economical situation that this country is in.
Pamela?
I have a question on when the deliverables would be received.
Oh, yeah, timing?
Yes.
Yes. As to the updates for both the water and sewer, we're expecting that we'll be able to get a draft recommendation and capital improvement program to you in about 3 months.
3 months. Yeah. Well, one of the things that we would maybe ask is if there are grant funding opportunities for any of us in any way. I know it's getting harder and harder to find any grant funds, but maybe there are some opportunities that they could point us in the right direction and we could just kind of spread our net out there.
Sure, sure. Well, and that is one of the things that Mr. Tuckfield mentioned as part of his effort, and we will be taking a look at that, obviously, into those opportunities for funding, whether they be grant funding or low-interest loans. But that will certainly be part of the mix.
And, you know, other utility companies have different programs for, you know, keeping a family healthy, such as PG&E. You know, they'll break it out.
Your mic still on? Yeah, we can't hear you through.
You got to leave it on.
Oh, shucks. I know that other utility companies have other, we used to call them compassionate use programs, or, you know, for low-income families and stuff. PG&E has one. The gas company has one. You know, your studies don't explore any of those programs and see if they're viable, maybe for the water and sewer departments.
Sure.
So yeah. If you include something like that.
Okay.
Vern?
Pamela asked the question I was going to ask. I don't have any questions.
And I guess my question was, you told Pamela 3 months is, and that will be that long for the rate study also?
No, I'm sorry. That was just to get the deliverables for the water and sewer master plan elements. And there'll be a little bit of overlap in the timeline for the rate study development. But one of the things that we'll be doing, our plan is to essentially move all three that he needs to collect from the district on user information and accounts.
And we're going to end up in the fourth quarter before we can make any adjustments?
Well, I wanted to address that, some of that, in my general manager comments later this evening. But, yeah, you're right. That looks like what would be happening. And so I had some comments on to make under general manager comments, because it more or less relates more to the budget and general manager's report than it does to the rate study.
Are there any other questions for Steve?
Madam President?
Yes.
Director Lucy, I'd like to address a couple of the concerns about the impact on residents. I think that is something that boards of all makes and points in time and geographic locations have been concerned on. After all, you guys are all elected out of the community, and I know that's uppermost on your mind. It has been in my entire 35-year career. As Director Lucy rightly noted, such an impact study is not in the scope of work here and is not costed either. And so unless the board directs otherwise, that is not going to be done. I just want to make that clear, and I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I'm just saying that's not what we asked Mr. Tuckfield to bring in his scope of work, and he and this predates my time here, by the way, and he didn't bring it. He's kind of given the typical rate study you want. I'm thinking if we wanted to look at such a thing, I'm not sure Mr. Tuckfield is the person to do that. You might want to have someone else look at it, and you shouldn't take that as a recommendation that we not use him, and don't take it as a recommendation we should use him. I'm just saying those might be two different skill sets or talents or resources available for that kind of a look. As far as compassionate rates, our attorney might want to weigh in on this himself, but it's a good idea, perhaps. It's a societal value in 20th century and 21st century America to offer that. However, in California, we are governed here in our business by Proposition 218, and it says rates must be proportional to the benefit that the property is receiving. And the attorneys that work for utilities such as ours is pretty much across the board said that makes it nigh on to issues there that resulted in that being passed by the voters, was they did not want a disproportionate cost on one category of user versus another category. They wanted all utility rates to be proportional to the benefit being received. And utility rates are a zero-sum game. If we give a lifeline rate to one group of customers, then that has to be made up from, you know, some other category of customers.
Thanks for the info.
And don't take those comments as saying, I don't think that's a worthy idea. I preface my remarks by saying it's a societal value. We do that for other utilities. But in the environment in which water and sewer rates must be set, I'm not sure we have the flexibility to do that. And I kind of would like our attorney to weigh in
there,
on that.
There is some game playing that some public agencies do to try and rationalize something that approaches a lifeline rate without really calling it that. And, you know, depending upon the particular circumstances of the community and your infrastructure, there have been a few communities that have been able to make that stick. But the general proposition is precisely as Kevin stated it.
Right, and I take all your comments in stride, I really do, but when 218 was passed, we weren't in the middle of a recession, and we didn't have the vacancy rates and the foreclosures, and we had a stock market at that time. So I think it's best to explore every option possible before we turn it into a ghost town over nickeling and dime people. You know, PG&E doesn't give, I don't know, other people can speak better than I can, but I know that they work with their customers and they don't take less payment. They just work with their customers. We don't want more foreclosures. We don't want more vacancies in this town. You know, we're already having criminal problems. You know, these empty houses are, they're a bad scene. You know, so I think there's more we can do.
I think, Director Lucy, that you outlined fairly well the economic condition of our nation today, which we're all suffering up with a tiered rate, where the least water, the smallest amount of water used is sold at the very most favorable rate. That tends to help low-income and senior people because they tend to be people that are using less water. They don't have lush lawns and landscapings around their homes because they, you know, can't afford the water bill. So they tend to fall in those lower categories, which ends up being like a lifeline type rate. Now, when you come over to the sewer side, that might be difficult to accomplish. I'm not saying it's impossible. It might be a possibility depending on what you base your sewer rates on. So there are some, you know, I didn't mean to be totally negative. There's be some possibilities for accomplishing a goal that gives some sort of relief to the lower income people in our community. I think Steve, you kind of understand those concepts that I've outlined as, and Wallace Group's work with that over and over again.
Thank you. Anyone else? Any comments from the public? Bringing it back to the board for a motion.
I think you could do the three items
as one, could we?
As not? One, yeah, with one motion, and it's accept the proposal for the, you know, and the motion would be the water master plan, the sewer master plan, and the rate study.
And I would move that we accept the proposal of $15,000 for the water master plan update, the proposal of $15,000 for the sewer collection system study, and the proposal for $30,000 for the water and sewer rate study, and direct staff to bring the appropriate agreements back to the board on January 14, 2009 for final approval.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Director Dean?
Yes.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Excuse me, Vice President Hill. Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Lucy?
No.
President Mann?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, that'll come back. Next, we have 10A,
what's before you. I think there were a couple of minor changes. I'm not quite sure I know what they are. Director Hill, you might want to outline them. So we've directed our attorney to prepare a resolution for you, and that was distributed to the board so that you can consider, if you would like to tonight, rescinding the existing rules of order and adopting these new rules in the attached document.
Would you like to speak to this, Jim?
This is basically the rules that District Council provided. District Council's charged with reviewing the rules of order annually, reporting back to us in February. As a result of bringing this up, some changes that were made in prior to February or subsequent to February, the meeting when Council did bring that to the board in this current year. This is the rules that Council provided to us, suggested rules in April of this year. And it would seem to me that these are fairly simple and easy to comply with rules and would tend to streamline our operations. And I would recommend that I think that any changes that were made were made by council. Is that not correct?
There were a couple of minor text clarifications in the document that don't change the substance of the document at all.
Right. So it's effectively what was presented to us by district council.
Discussion? Mary?
No.
Pamela?
Yes, I do. First of all, I've looked at the resolution. It doesn't show what the changes were made in August. We have made changes over the period of time, and it doesn't show what is being changed in this resolution that we had in place as of August 13th, 2008. And that's, I think, a disregard to not let the people know, the public know what's going on, what's been stricken from this. Our new board member has not been a party to any of this and hasn't seen it. And there are a lot of things taken out of here that are not even spoken to, and that is the rotation for the committee assignments. That we worked on thinking that it was the most fair and equitable way to actually train new members, new board members, and all of the members so that everybody had a chance to gain knowledge about all the various segments of the operation of the district. So I know Vern and I were on the ad hoc committee. We worked this out. And now it's requested that it be rescinded, and it's not even available for the public to see what is being rescinded or the new members. So I think it's a disservice to the public. It should have been shown what is deleted, as we have done on other adjustments to our resolutions. And we felt that when we wrote the changes to the committee assignments, that it was running our operation here in this district more like a business and more like a good training opportunity for all the board members. So what I see here, I cannot support. I think it needs to be brought back with the changes struck out, and those need to be shown to the public and to the board members. This is not what we have in place at the moment.
Vern?
I would agree with that. I think that, if we can show that and make sure that all of us feel that all five of us understand what's going on and what's being taken out, and the public understands what's being taken out, and so that we can you know, then if that's what the board decides, then that's, you know, then that's the way we'll go. And, I mean, if we were working on particular protocols for the board, as well as far as how things progress through the meeting to reduce a lot of the conflict that's been happening. And I'm glad to see that you recognize that in your opening statement on how you're running the meetings. I'm really very happy with that. And but I think that that's something that should be looked at, and then just bring it back at the next board meeting. And if that's the way the board decides, then that's the way the board decides. But at least then we and the public and everything can see what's being removed as well as what's being put in place. And we're only talking one more meeting, so it shouldn't change things, make much of a difference for.
Mary, did you have any comments at this? I'm sorry. Are you finished, Vern?
Yeah.
Mary, did you have any comments at this point?
I do have some comments, and I have had a chance to read this, and I have had a chance to read the previous document. So, and this goes up for review, I guess, automatically in February. Is that correct?
The current rules of order, and for as long as I know, they have always said that every year in February, I'm supposed to bring proposed changes to you. There has been some discussion recently as part of the codification process about how these rules of order might fit within the code or somehow be referenced in the code. So that annual review might become moot depending upon what we do with the code. But you are correct. Normally I would come back to you in February with a full review. The directive that I got late last week was simply to try and put something in front of you that took you back to where you were last March when those changes were made. And I found out about this Thursday afternoon. I didn't get a chance to do it till Saturday morning, and right, just didn't have the time to do what Director Dean is asking for.
Mm-hmm. We appreciate your response on relatively short notice with this. To clarify exactly what subjects are being changed, two provisions were added subsequent to April last year to the rules of order, which are the current rules of order, and they provide for removal of either of the officers at will. And a second portion also requires that the committees be changed should that happen. And I think our experience last year was that was very disruptive. And to borrow a phrase from one of my co-board members, made our operation here relatively a laughing stock in the annals of board operation. And it would seem to me that we should give the officers the year to serve and not try to upset the committees on an annual basis, other than the change on an annual basis, which has always been the rules and is the rules throughout government service. Rather than to have the committees change perhaps multi-times during a year due to infighting and so forth that might result on the board. So again, this I recommend doing this at this time because it will streamline our operation, bring our rules in order with other agencies and so forth. So at this time, I would move that we adopt Resolution 2008-23, which will rescind the existing rules of order and replace them with the rules of order.
I think I need
here
to go to the public for public comment on this.
Mm-hmm. Is there a motion on the floor? I'm sorry.
No, the motion is held until okay. The public makes their comment.
Mm-hmm. Jeanette Oceano. If I remember, well, this is the public talking, right? And if I remember last year, or this year, when everything was changed, we asked, please do not change it. Wait until the new board members. And Mr. Dahl, Mr. Dean, Mr. Buka, they didn't want to listen to the public. They made the decision. I really think that we should go for the change today. Thank you.
Okay. Now, you want to repeat your motion, Jim?
I would move that we adopt Resolution 2008-23, which is a resolution governing operations and functions of the Board of Directors, which has the effect of rescinding the current rules of order and replacing them with the rules of order that were in the public packet.
Madam President?
Yes.
May I ask the maker of the motion if he would accept a friendly amendment that in the title it says a resolution of the Oceano Community Services District adopting rules of order to govern certain operations and functions of the Board of Directors, that the word certain be brought back to the board to be defined. The word certain is not defined, and so it's not very strong legal language and can be perceived as a loophole. So if we could define certain, I could certainly support bringing this back to our original policies and procedures and then go back for a review in February. Would you accept that friendly amendment to come back with a definition of certain and say January, February? I could even hold till February.
That would be fine.
Thank you.
Okay, there is a motion on the floor. Roll call, please.
I'm sorry.
It's a friendly amendment to the original motion that the word certain will be brought back with a definition.
And the amendment was accepted by the maker of the motion. I'm not sure it got accepted by the seconder.
Yes, it did.
The seconder, the person who seconded it accepted that.
There is no second.
There is no second yet. Okay.
But the maker of the motion, if he accepts that.
I would, right. I would agree to your...
Now I'm looking for a second.
Modification.
You have to get a second before you can do a friendly.
Where am I, Alex? I have a motion.
You're looking for a second.
You're looking for second. A second to the motion as amended.
All right. Okay. And I do have a second. All right. Roll call, please. Yes. What?
No, sir. You've already called for it.
No. Well, what did I miss? This is a
learning. No, I just wanted to restate that I don't think the public has been adequately given the information of what's actually being changed here.
All right.
And that's the reason that I wanted to hold it over for one more meeting.
Okay. Thank you.
Vice President Hill?
Yes.
Director Lucy?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
No.
Director Dean?
No.
President Mann?
Yes. Motion carries 3-2. Committee assignments. Was this the only sheet?
Here?
Oh, okay.
I didn't know how the president would like to handle it.
Everybody's going to get a sheet and list what you want on there, because the way it was, you quote wouldn't have the one committee that you were on that you might have liked to be on, you wouldn't be on there again if it was in the old rules because the year was up.
I'm still going by the old rules because I felt that was appropriate.
Okay.
And so I will only ask for the rotational type of thing.
So what do you want? Do you want our name at the top of this? And
yeah, put, you don't have to give it back tonight. You can drop it off at the office because they'll compile them.
All right.
I'm sorry, I missed it. Do you want them by a certain time so that we can formalize it for the agenda pass in January?
Yeah. When would the staff like to have these back?
How about by January 7th?
Okay, January 7th, everybody.
That you want these back?
Yes, back to Gina or to Kevin. And we'll do our best to give people what they want. All right, now we're Kevin. You're next up, adjourning to, or I guess Alex, executive session.
Yes.
Right, correct.
Madam President, members of the board, members of the public, item 11A is a closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.8 to meet with the agency's negotiator concerning property negotiations and to grant authority regarding terms. The property involved is an interest in the district's water entitlements. The person or persons with whom the agency negotiator may negotiate is the authorized agent for the city of Arroyo Grande.
If you would like to go in the front office rather than
welcome to. Hey, Mary, you get to turn this off now.
Yep. Yep.
God, it's getting late. We love the
water. Your mic is going to be a little ineffective, Mary.
Mary, if you don't keep that towards you, it. Keep your mic towards you, it really messes them up.
Well, Barbara, you don't want the mic really that close to me.
Well, just
where they can hear everything.
Talking a softer voice.
They have a way. Are we on?
If you're ready, we're on.
No, don't put us on yet.
Yes. Alex?
Madam President, members of the board, members of the public, with regard to item 11A, a conference with the district's real property negotiator regarding a water rights agreement. In closed session, the board approved a temporary water supply agreement between the city of Arroyo Grande and the Oceano Community Services District. It was approved on a 3-2 vote with Directors Hill, Dean, and Dahl voting yes, Director Lucy and President Mann voting no. A copy of the agreement will be available tomorrow morning at the district office for anyone who wants to pick up a copy. It will not be an executed copy, but it will be available.
Thank you. Going to 12A, President or Vice President Hill reporting on his committees.
I attended the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District meeting on December 3rd. The action items there were payment for digester number 2, repair coating, progress payment. That's one of the major budget items, the repair and ongoing refurbishment of the digester. The district website, we received a presentation about that. The district is creating a website. It's actually up and running. I believe it's slocsd.org. So you can Google that or search for it. And not all of the information is up there yet. Most of the information is there. The district's agendas and so forth are being posted. At the time that we received the report, there had been few photographs attached, so there's some additional uploads to be made to the website, but that project is coming along well. Also, we dealt with sewer trunk line video inspection. That's a 2-year requirement that is moving along, and we authorized proceeding with development of contract documents for rehabilitation of damaged sewer liner segments that will be using cured in place pipe rather than digging out and above ground work. It'll all be done with cured in place pipe. So that was the majority of the board meeting. We're also waiting for the transfer of the little triangle portion of property adjacent to the airport runway. That's been in the works for several years, and it's almost. The district council, Mike Seitz, has been doing a good job interfacing with the county to get that final transfer, and he's expecting that possibly within the next couple of meetings. So that's also moving along. That's about it for the sanitation district.
Do you have anything
and
else?
And I'll defer that special meeting to someone else who attended.
Okay. Director Dahl?
Yes. I attended the November Airport Land Use Commission meeting, and we had a staff update on the noise complaint data for the year, and there was also there weren't very many complaints here in Oceana. There was also an item on the property that I told you about a couple meetings back, where the property was, it's in an area that's supposed to be 20 acre feet, but they were allowed to divide down to 10 acre parcels, supposed to be 20 acre parcels, and now one of the 10 acre parcels is wanting to divide down to 5 acre parcels, and the airport land use plan did not allow for that if it's a noise complaint area, and the property owner was actually the person that has issued most of the noise complaints off that piece of property, so it may be because of that that they are unable to, it was not approved as being compatible because of, I believe because of that reason. And then there was a couple industrial buildings going in south of the airport in San Luis Obispo, and those were approved. And then there's a, this was a discussion on a piece of property for several homes near the country club, Crestmont Hills area, that was just a discussion item, and that was the basis of the meeting for the Airport Land Use Commission. The Oceano Advisory Commission was canceled, and I did not attend the Zone 11A meeting. I think, Barbara, you attended that in my place. And that's everything for me.
You want to talk about the special meeting on the 19th?
No, I'll leave that for someone else to comment
on. Pamela, you get the 19th.
I'm going to report on the fire committee meeting from last night, the 9th. Most of the things that we talked about have appeared on the board agenda. But the one thing that we had a report from our interim general manager, Kevin Walsh, is on the relating to the fire oversight committee and the consolidation, and the thrust of the consolidation is toward the JPA. They have found, they being the people on the special committee, and Chief Heath is one of the main members of that, plus members of the other communities, they found that proceeding with the JPA is the highest degree of fire protection for the community. They said CAL FIRE didn't look good, and the district, another district, was not the way. So what they've been looking at is they've been researching other JPAs that have been executed throughout California, and found one in Belmont and San Carlos up in the Bay Area. Then they have a formula for cost sharing expenses. They've also looked into now proceeding with a sample budget for a JPA, and they're also looking to include the unions in the next phase of this. So they're working on this. This is our progress report. This is our December progress report. And the target for this is in February, that it come back to the Fire Oversight Committee in February, and we have more of a comprehensive report at that stage. And then the big one for me was the November 20th Zone 11A. It's always big. What we found out was that Lopez Lake is at 62.5% capacity. They are processing 4 million gallons per day of Lopez water and 1 million gallon per day of state water. It's back online. The plant is running well, and they finished the plant upgrades. So the Paul test, which is one of the last items for the water treatment plant, was in progress, and it went for 4 to 6 weeks, I believe. They said the people that provided these are the filters for the water, are being very responsive, and replaced a leaking pipe for them at no cost. So they will probably have a final report on the filters themselves next year, in another month. They said Black and Veatch is covering the DAF systems, and they're working on a prefab metal building at the site. They said that on the budget, the Lopez, and we've gone through this before, the items for operating the water treatment plant, the costs for operations and maintenance have gone up. So the final costs are about $300,000 higher. They are going to offset that by not putting in the perimeter fence and doing some pigging. So this year, at least, we get a break, and we will not have the increase in cost. In fact, they said, and this is later on, but they said we may get a small rebate, which is good news to hear, because that was worrying everybody there. We did ask, or I asked about the fencing, and they said there are some areas around the perimeter where they are having intrusions. So they are looking to maybe get a grant for the fencing and doing it in small bits and pieces. The big thing that we talked about, several big things, is it's called the Obermeyer gates, or the bladder. And I can show you what the Obermeyer gates look like. These are put at the spillway. They raise the spillway of Lopez Lake, so it will trap more water. They're talking anywhere from 3 to 6 feet of raising. I think I have a picture here. And I have to show you what it looks like. It's quite an amazing thing. There it is, Obermeyer Gates. So this is what we talked about a lot. There is a report out from URS. They are the people who did the technical study, and they found that each foot of raise of the spillway gives you 1,000 additional acre feet of storage. They are also finding that to raise it 3 feet is probably the best way to go. Looking with the Division of Dam Safety, they wanted to be sure that there would be no fatal flaw engineering-wise to do this, and they saw that there was none. What happens with this is the environmental document is the big cost on doing this. It takes at least 2 years. It will probably impact the habitat protection for the steelhead, the habitat conservation plan that we've been working on with Fish and Game for many, many years now. And we're still out there trying to finalize that. So one of the things they may not want to do is to proceed with that before we have the steelhead plan in place. However, they're saying a 3 foot raise will cost about $4.5 million. The safe yield from that 3 foot raise would be 731 to 916 acre feet a year. So the cost for 1 year only, this is 1 year only, so don't get this confused because it didn't really explain it, is that it would be $4,500 to $6,500 per acre foot. However, these gates go on for 10, 20, even more years. They really don't wear out. So they said if you figured this for a 10-year period, you'd get to $450 to $650 per acre foot per year. And they did show what happened in the last few years as far as the capture in Lake Lopez of water, and when the years would be, we would have captured the water in the dam raise. So those things will be coming up. They wanted us to vote on this if we wanted to participate in this. At the meeting, I said, no, we can't do that. This has to come back to the board so that we can discuss this. So after the TAC meeting, which was the December 4th, they said they were going to provide us with an agreement and a cost, because our costs on this would be proportional to what our take of Lopez Water is, and it's 6.69%. That's what we take from Lopez. So we're looking at approximately $300,000 to participate in the Obermeyer Gates. And that's got to come back to the board, and hopefully that will be in our early January meeting. So that's a big thing coming, and hopefully they will come and explain it to everybody and lay it out as the agreement and the amount and everything. Several other things. One of the things we talked about also was Lopez Lake and quagga mussels. So that's been an ongoing worry. We're still mussel free. They are telling us their inspections in August and September. They inspected and decontaminated 3,397 boats and tagged 1,770 of them. That means they could come back into the lake, and they rejected 32 because there was water in the bilge. The other big thing was State Water has projected that they will deliver at this stage 15% of our State Water. They always start out like this because they don't know what the snowfall will be, and they adjust it as they go along. So we are all hoping that we have a very wet year and a lot of snow in the Sierras, and that we also deal with the environmental problems. They are still working on Nacimiento, which has no inspections or monitoring for the quagga mussels. That's a problem. And they're now tying it in, the County of Monterey is tying it into the Nacimiento project. So it's an ongoing discussion on that. Let's see. I think those, HCP, which is the Habitat Conservation Plan for the Steelhead. We had submitted it with to Anthony Spina with, it's the Fish and Game people, no, National Marine Fisheries. And he has looked at it, and he was not too pleased with our plan. So they've sent it back to us to broaden it so that we extend the rainfall triggers, so that when there's rainfall that we will release more water from Lopez at that point. And we did discuss just briefly the ag water use, which is 4,200 acre feet a year. We really haven't got into talking with the ag users yet, and so that's ongoing for what we need to do in the future. I think that's about it. Any other questions? Anybody have questions?
How about telling us about the special meeting on the 19th?
I even forgot what we did on the special meeting.
You never forget anything, Pamela.
No, I do.
I don't remember either.
Neither do I, which is why I deferred
okay.
it.
Okay, we don't know what
we're going to wait until we get the minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, we authorized the purchase of a diesel engine.
Oh, that's right. Oh, the important
thing. To replace the Rolls-Royce generator.
Yeah, it's all Phil should have told us.
Madam President, sorry. May I ask a question of Director Dean? Was there any time frame on that raising Lopez and when the participating members, ourselves, Grover City, Rio Grande, and so forth, had to report back as to yay or nay we're in on this deal? I mean, did they give a time?
We're talking in January. They wanted to know, and so I'm thinking we need to contact Dean Benedicts at the county and see when we will have that agreement. He is supposed to put that out. Phil, you attended the TAC meeting. Did they speak to that issue when you had that meeting?
Yes, they did, and I don't know any agreements when we're going to get it.
Okay. We can't do anything until the agreements come to us.
Oh, okay.
And they were pushing to have us all
commit to something at the last meeting, and we said, no, we cannot do that. We have to go back to our boards here.
Right. That's what I'd understood, yeah. this pushing term. And so yeah. I had understood that, and I wondered if there was some deadline set or
as soon as possible,
like that,
and they're talking January. They'd like to get something to our response in January, and we need to get it so we can get it on the agenda. We told Dean that we needed a particular amount of time. I told him we didn't have time to make the December meeting either. So
we'll aim for our January 14th regular meeting.
Yeah, then. That's what I'm thinking it would be. And we may need some input from them. They may need to have to come to a presentation.
And you'd like to have them do a presentation here? Because
I think it would be useful.
I'll take and make sure that happens.
Yeah, I think it would be useful. It's a complicated thing. I just gave you the briefest outline of it. But it's something to consider.
My understanding was individual LOPES recipients could opt in or opt out.
You can opt out, yes.
Without penalty.
Without penalty. It's an additional water source. So it's kind of a big deal to decide. And it's also kind of a lot of money.
Well, I'm sure Royal Grant would help with that.
This is, when we were speaking about selling water, this is their one thing that they're very interested in doing, of course, because it is a fairly cheap, reliable way to have more water available, and they can manipulate it so that it releases mean that they can have storage over several years too.
When you started your report, I thought you said zone 1-1A, but it was zone 3 that you were talking
I'm
about.
Talking zone 3. If I said zone 1-1A, I'm sorry. I was on that one for a while.
Yeah.
It was very interesting too, but zone 3. Yes.
I attended Zone 1-1A in Director Dahl's absence, and the county ladies were basically talking about what had been accomplished this past season and talking about grants that they were applying for and permits that they were going to be trying to get. Not much information, really. It lasted about 35 minutes.
Oh, short meeting.
Yeah, very short meeting. That's all I have to report. So, Mary Lucy, you had nothing, right?
Come on, Barbara. I may have just got here, but you've known me a lot of years. I always have something to say.
All right. What committees did you attend?
Actually, I want to thank the community for electing me and all the support that I've received. Many people have come to the office. I work at Dave's Fax and Copy in Grover, and so people can come by and talk to me and voice their concerns. I particularly want to thank the people in the mobile home parks along the creek. I learned really a lot from the people who live in those parks, and they are still calling me. And I just received a book on the Arroyo Grande Creek, the history of it, And so I'm learning a lot about the area and stuff like that. I had ran on the campaign that I was going to introduce a motion regarding directors having litigation against the board. I'm drafting that proposal, and we'll bring it to you in a draft form. So it is tight, concise, no loopholes, and it works to everybody's benefit. So, thanks.
Okay, I think at this point then we'll continue on with the board member items to discuss and then go to Kevin since Mary got ahead of us there.
Wait, call my name, didn't you?
Okay, Jim, you have anything to board member discussion?
I don't have anything right now, no.
Pamela?
None.
Vern?
Nothing. No.
Well, I think I probably made mine in the beginning, but I'm looking forward to us having a great year, all working together for the community, and that hopefully we can come together and be really responsible board members. Kevin, now, General Manager's discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of things in addition to what's listed here. The codification project, or codification if you prefer, is going along. It is making progress. Our attorney did distribute to the board is a 1.5-inch thick compilation of your codes in an organized, concise manner. It is good work. I've seen these before. It's going to be a valuable tool for the district. Many community service districts, water districts, sanitary districts have their rules in several resolutions, ordinances, minute orders that are confused and conflicted and different definitions and other provisions that vary from ordinance and resolution from time to time that make it hard to know what the district's rules and regulations are. And Oceano here is about to join a smaller group of people that have got a more uniform code-like presentation and moving into the 21st century ahead of many. So you're to be commended for your foresight in asking your attorney to do that. I just this week finished reviewing the code myself, read every page and have several marks on it. I want to myself take that and compare to some other districts' codes for sewer and water just to make sure we've covered everything and addressed it. From memory, it looks like we've done a really good job through the years of getting everything addressed that should be and having rules for things. So I want to take another look at it from a comparison point of view. And I know you guys have those codes and it is moving along, so I'd encourage you to set a little bit of time aside each day or each week. You can't do it all in one bite. It's too much. Set a little bit of time and go through a piece at a time so you can finish your look and try and take a look at it from with your board member hat on. Try and put on a staff member hat who's got to administer these things and a public who may not be familiar with what we do here hat and having to read it and maybe want to know how to do a duplex or something like that. So consider it from those points of view. Before going to other things, Counselor, did you have anything you wanted to add to the codification?
No, we're planning on meeting in the next week or two to talk a little bit about what Kevin's thoughts are. Then we may need to make a strategic decision about whether we want to rework the document and give you another couple of inches to look at, or hold Kevin's ideas, come and have a meeting with you, and see what direction you want to go in. So that's sort of the preview of coming events, I think.
Yeah, there's some tactics and strategy both to work out because it is so voluminous. You don't have the time to review 4 and 5 drafts, you know. ethics training is being offered Saturday, January 24th, up at the Templeton Community Services District. I believe this is being sponsored by our local chapter of California Special Districts Association. It's being conducted by John Seitz and Ty Green. This is something that's required for all directors that are newly seated. It's Assembly Bill 1234 was the law that was passed that required that. And for all sitting directors, every 2 years. And I know the ones that are here are current already, but you might consider that if you are a director that just got elected to a 4-year term, you at least got to go through this 2 more times, regardless of when you take it. So maybe you would all like to take it together. I don't know, and get the same information. It probably doesn't hurt to have it sooner rather than later. But I know some of you are already current. You wouldn't need to go. Director Lucy, you don't need to go to this one, but there is a time frame in which you do need to attend.
And you say Saturday, the 24th?
Yeah, in Templeton.
Oh,
okay. At the time?
January?
1 p.m. to 4 p.m., 3 hours. These are offered around at different places. Some counties have a more aggressive schedule with attorneys and groups offering them. San Luis Obispo seems to be, from my experience, a little light on offering this training. I mean, it's adequate. It's just not as many opportunities. So I don't know when the next one would be or if it would even be this close. And I'll give you the information on that so you can make a decision. And the other board members can think about it, too. I was contacted by an officer, Arroyo, in the probation department of the sheriff's here in San Luis Obispo. He was wondering if we'd be interested in a presentation on gang prevention, gang intervention that's being started for Oceano and Arroyo Grande area. He is also talking about the intervention of youth. It's called Youth in Action, doing early intervention as, you know, we get notice of people being involved in gang activity. You heard our sheriff substation commander give a presentation on that earlier tonight, you know, on the other end after they're involved in gangs and the consequences. So what I've done is I've asked Sheriff Haskell if he wouldn't contact Officer Arroyo to learn more about it, because I understand we like to have one point of contact here and not be confused with, you know, several different people from the sheriff's department. So I've asked Officer Haskell if he wouldn't contact him and let them coordinate what they might bring to the board. But I am asking you if you'd be interested even in hearing about the presentation or
yes.
Like to kind of know about it, okay? So I'll pass that on.
The only thing I might add to that is this going to be a presentation oriented toward bringing us up to speed or telling us something, or is it something that they like to get out to the public? And if it's something they like to get out to the public, it might be something we put in our, if there's time, we put in our
water bill.
Yeah, our water bill, so that if any public wants to come and hear it, or at least they're aware of it, that it'll be shown on TV. Yeah, I don't know what the purpose of it is, so depending on what the
Probably it's both. So why don't I work with Brian Haskell on it and coordinate time and mailings and all that and see if they would like for there to be a wider distribution.
Okay. Sounds good.
Proposition 218, we mentioned that earlier tonight. That governs our rate setting procedures. Proposition 218 in some cases calls for an election. We don't need an election on our rates necessarily unless there's was be a significant number of protests crossing a threshold amount that would require that. But we do have to have a hearing according to that proposition. And your budget that you adopted for this fiscal year anticipated a mid-year rate increase. And the mid-year is upon us. And we have some statutory time requirements for setting a rate. You also have authorized earlier this evening a rate study. And I'm suggesting that at this point we try and do some sort of plain vanilla, I'll call it, rate increase. Nothing with any major changes to the structure, maybe just kind of an across-the-board thing to keep your rates where they need to be going, keep them headed in the right direction, and to provide for the revenue stream without having to dip into our reserves to fund our operations. You could wait for that rate study to be completed, but that's probably not going to be done till very close to the next fiscal year, in which case you're going to be drawing on your reserves. And I'm not recommending you do that. I'm recommending we look at having a Proposition 218 hearing. We can hear from the public, see what they have to say about it. Board can make a decision. It's not an item for action tonight. It's just the general manager's report. If the board's inclined to go in that direction, then I think we ought to schedule this for the next meeting for a full discussion, whether or not you want to have a rate hearing sometime late this winter or early spring.
Yes.
Yeah. You don't have to raise rates. We just put on to discuss whether you want to have a more open board discussion.
Yes.
So I'm discerning there's a consensus that yes, we'd like to schedule that for the January meeting.
January.
Let the public come and comment too. It won't be the Proposition 218 hearing. We're just going to discuss whether we want to move in that direction.
So you're planning on saying, do you want to have a rate increase, or are you planning on saying, we think we might raise your $10 or something? Are you going to give them a figure, or are you just going to say, how do you feel about a rate increase?
Those are excellent questions. I'm thinking that we would be explaining that our budget anticipated a mid-year rate increase, and it was of a certain amount, and that in order to do that, you have to conduct hearing. There's certain procedural steps to follow, certain statutory timelines, and do we want to embark on that process? And that the budget anticipated greater than 20%, 23% sticks in my mind, rate increase. We have a sale of water to Rio Grande that might mitigate some of that, make it less, and I'll work up some numbers to come up with the value, and I think it'll be something less than 20. But don't count on it being going into single digits. I tell you that's not going to happen. So we could give the information at that time. I think the purpose of the meeting is to decide whether you want to start on that process now or wait till your rate study's done, which means a further drawing down of our district reserves.
I think we should do it before the study, because whoever's doing the study, maybe they'll get a little insight.
Also,
too, is that we don't know what's going to happen to people out there. This rate increase is going to be different than past, I think, because of the state that things are in.
I don't think that you're preempting your rate study either, because that will be probably not finalized till the next fiscal year. You're going to be into another budget cycle. As bad as the economy is, to use that word, we're not seeing a deflation in prices. In fact, some things that we are involved with keep going up. So you're going to have another budget to face, and that rate study will be just in time to help you with that budget on a structure rates, in which case you'll need another Proposition 218 hearing with its statutory requirements, including timelines and things like that.
I think we should direct staff to put this on the next agenda then.
Yeah.
Does everybody agree?
I agree.
Okay.
Anything else,
okay,
Kevin?
Thank you. No, that concludes my comments.
Consideration of warrants.
I did forget something. I'm sorry. I was going to have Gina give you an update on where you are on your general manager recruitment, and possible consideration by the board to put this on closed session for your January 14th meeting for a more detailed update. But we can give you some information now.
The only thing I really have to tell you at this time is we renewed our CSDA advertisement, and it's been out in Western Cities. This has happened since the last board meeting when I said we had 13 applications. We now have 30. And there's more coming in each day.
Thank you.
And the letters, maybe you could explain.
Yes, and we are sending letters out to the applicants explaining that until November 25th, we really didn't know if we would have a new director on the board. And that's kind of pushed our schedule for the initial review of the applications into January. And just asking them to please let us know if they're still interested in the position, just so they know where we are at this point.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, back to the warrants.
I've been negotiating with the union that represents our three fire captains, and I'm going to be bringing to the board at the January in a closed session an update and status on those fire department negotiations, and I think that would be a good time to discuss and explain this. The short answer might be, though, you have three people and you want to cover 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You end up with some overtime. Not another way to do that. But it is more complicated and complex, and maybe it is something the board would like to take a look at that as an appropriate closed session discussion.
Thank you.
Any other questions on any of the warrants? We don't have to split this one up anymore. Okay. Looking for a motion?
I move we pay the bills.
I second that. It's been moved and seconded to pay the bills. All in favor?
Aye.
That takes care of that. The last thing we have on here is a public comment. Any public comment?
Janet Oceano. What I want to say is to Mary Lucy, we are the community of Oceano is very happy in having you. It shows very well, especially tonight, the care that you have for Oceano. Don't change. Keep the way you are. And we know that you care for Oceano. It shows very well.
Thank you. Is there any written communication that was received after the agenda was put together? No? If not, we are adjourned. Oh.
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. All that.
Very good.
Okay. Meeting is now adjourned.